The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, friends. This is Larry Wilson for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Kiplinger.com and also Kiplinger Personal Finance. Our first article is from Kiplinger.com, and we've heard many of these tips before, but they are certainly worth hearing again. And these are 15 money-saving tips that actually work. Saving money in today's economy might sound like a steep challenge, but with the right tips, it is achievable. Whether you need help diversifying your income, lowering your expenses, or increasing your savings, there are actionable ways to achieve your financial goals. Clever and realistic ways to save money. This article covers 15 saving tips that won't disappoint you. And starting off with number one, track your expenses. The first step to saving more money is to know your spending habits. Track every dollar you spend throughout the month and categorize it based on the type of expense. Once you know how much you spend in each category, it'll be easy to identify areas for improvement. And number two, create a budget. It's tough to avoid overspending without a proper budget in place. Hence, you must start budgeting your income to avoid overspending and increase your savings. A common budgeting rule is the 50-30-20 rule, where you allocate half of your income to your needs, 30% to your wants, and 20% to your savings. However, you can start with a lower savings rate or establish a specific amount as your saving goal. Number three, cut out unnecessary spending. Avoid wasting money on products or services that don't provide any or much value to your day-to-day life. For example, if you're subscribed to an unnecessarily expensive cell phone plan, or you frequently dine out, consider exploring cheaper alternatives to allocate more funds to the things that truly matter. Number four, set goals for yourself. Finding motivation or tracking your progress through your money-saving journey can be tricky without specifying your goals. That's why it's crucial to know your short and your long-term financial goals. And when setting goals, I highly recommend using the SMART model, as it's a straightforward template for structuring objectives. Number five, set up an automatic savings account. To ensure you always remember to set aside money for your savings, automate transferring funds to your savings account. Most major banking institutions already offer automatic direct deposits, so you shouldn't have trouble setting one up. Number six, well, we've heard this one before for sure, cancel unnecessary subscriptions. Make it a habit to regularly check your subscriptions and cancel the ones you haven't used for the past few months. Canceling unused subscriptions can save you money without much sacrifice. And if you ever want to subscribe to the same service again, guess what? You can always easily do so in minutes. Number 12, use cashback apps. Cashback applications can help you save money, and many integrate automatically with your debit or credit cards. So, you can benefit from their monetary rewards just by setting up the application once. Number 13, avoid impulse purchases. One of the biggest financial mistakes you can make is spending money on things or services you don't want or need. Before deciding to purchase something, it's an excellent habit to wait a few days first. Take this cool-down period to research the product and carefully consider whether it's worth spending money on. And number 14, reduce your household bills. Household bills are unavoidable, but you can lower your monthly outlay like many other expenses. Consider looking for cheaper alternatives for recurring bills, such as your internet or your cable subscription. Those that are charged based on consumption, on the other hand, should proactively be used as little as possible. And lastly, number 15. This is an interesting one. Use the cash envelope budgeting system. The cash envelope budgeting system is one of the best ways to avoid overspending and save more money. It physically limits how much money you can spend on specific spending categories. The traditional approach of this budgeting method requires you to use physical cash and envelopes. But many applications now allow you to mimic this system digitally. And those are certainly good points for all of us to consider. Our next article is an interesting one coming from Kiplinger Personal Finance. Get what you've owed from your health insurance plan. If your insurer refuses to pay for a treatment or procedure that you believe should be covered, use our guide to appeal. This article by Kimberly Langford. Depending on your health insurance policy, you may have noticed that you need to get permission from your insurer before it will pay for a medication, treatment, or procedure that your doctor may prescribe, even if it's covered by your plan. This extra step, called prior authorization, is becoming more common with most types of health insurance, including Medicare Advantage, employer coverage, and individual plans sold through healthcare.gov or your state health insurance marketplace. When your health plan requires prior authorization, your doctor must provide evidence that the specific care is medically necessary and is the best course of action in your situation. Prior authorization requirements have increased significantly over the past few years. For example, virtually all enrollees in Medicare Advantage plans are required to obtain prior authorization for some services, and these insurers made nearly 50 million prior authorization determinations in 2023, and that's up from 37 million in 2021, according to Health Policy Research Organization, KFF. Insurers don't always approve these requests. In 2023, for example, Medicare Advantage insurers fully or partially denied 3.2 million prior authorization requests, according to KFF. Insurers say that prior authorization provides a vital screen to ensure patients receive safe, evidence-based care and to reduce low-value and inappropriate services so that coverage is as affordable as possible. The American Medical Association, however, calls prior authorization an overused process that interferes with patients receiving timely care or even any care at all. More than one in four physicians report that delays or denials related to prior authorization have led to a serious adverse event, such as hospitalization, disability, or even death for a patient in their care. And prior authorization isn't the only obstacle you may encounter. You may face a denial of your claim after you receive a procedure or treatment if the insurer decides that your coverage doesn't include it or you didn't get the necessary prior authorization first. Insurers of health plans sold on healthcare.gov denied 19% of in-network claims and 37% of out-of-network claims in 2023, according to KFF. But you don't have to take no for an answer, and being persistent often pays off. Less than 12% of Medicare Advantage prior authorization denials were appealed in 2023, but more than 81% of the appeal denials were partially or fully overturned. Only 1% of the in-network denials were appealed for the policy sold on healthcare.gov, but 44% of the denials were overturned at the first level of appeal. You may also be able to successfully appeal denials from employer health insurance plans or traditional Medicare, whether for prior authorization or for a service you already received, although few people know their appeal rights. Never accept the first denial letter you get, because it's often just the default reaction to treatment protocols, especially if it's someone new, says Suzanne Garner, age 47, of San Diego, who was first diagnosed with breast cancer 7 years ago. It doesn't matter if the treatment is fully FDA approved, and in the case of oncology care, even if the National Cancer Coalition and the ASCO, which is the American Society of Clinical Oncology, have endorsed it to be a piece of standard of care, she says. If it's new for a while, it's likely to be denied. By appealing, Garner has successfully reversed more than 20 prior authorization denials and 5 denials for claims after receiving a bill. At the beginning, I was very intimidated when I would get these denials and big cost estimates, and I remember crying and saying to my husband that we would have to go into our daughter's college fund or our retirement fund, Garner says. For the most part, we figured it out, but it took being brave, advocating for myself, and waiting on hold a lot. Don't be afraid to appeal, and don't be afraid to ask a lot of questions. Here's what you need to know to appeal a health insurance denial, whether it involves a prior authorization request or a big bill following a procedure or treatment that you believe your insurance should cover. We'll start with help from your doctor. The procedure for appealing a denial varies depending on the type of health insurance. You have to follow the timeline and the instructions on the explanation of benefits or the Medicare summary notice, says Tanina Fessio, education and training specialist for California Health Advocates. She helps people with all levels of appeals through HICAP, the state's health insurance assistance program. Whatever the appeals process, you should contact your doctor's office right away after you receive a denial. There's a certain amount of time to appeal. Sometimes it's 30 to 60 days, depending on the insurance. But we might not be alerted to that denial until 21 days have passed. And sometimes it's a fight against time, says Michelle Vanderwall, who spent more than 20 years as an operations manager for several surgical specialties in a San Diego hospital system. Your doctor's office can help you determine how urgently you need care. When you're diagnosed with a major disease, you might feel as though you have to rush to get treatment with no time for appeals, Garner says. Oftentimes, when you're told you have cancer, it feels like a medical emergency, but you may have weeks or a month or two where you can take a breath and make sure everything is lined up before you have that surgery or scan for treatment. Plus, Your medical team may regularly deal with appeals, developing expertise in navigating them. The staff at the Office of Garner's Oncologist were instrumental in overturning denials for PET scans, breast MRIs, and other procedures. My oncologist and her team have gone to bat for me. I've had so many scans denied, she says. I had a number of PET scans because I also have an autoimmune disease that will show up on these imaging studies. The insurer initially denied the request for PET scans and wanted her to have CT scans instead. Several of the denials were reversed after her oncologist got on the phone with a doctor at the insurance company and explained her specific needs, a step called a peer-to-peer review. Bruce Broad, a physician and clinical professor of dermatology at the University of Pennsylvania Perelman School of Medicine, says that he sometimes can get a denial reversed through a peer-to-peer review. But the conversation isn't necessarily with other dermatologists, so he may need to take extra time to explain the patient's needs. Oftentimes, I'm talking with a nurse practitioner who was involved in primary care or a primary care physician. Or sometimes, I talk to an OBGYN or internist who works for the insurance company, says Broad. Another reason to contact your doctor's office after a denial, it may be a simple mistake. Garner received a bill for the full cost of a particular surgery for her lumpectomy. When I got the notice, it looked as though insurance covered zero, and I didn't understand, she says. I was stressed out about it, and I brought all the paperwork to my next visit and had my team look at it. They discovered that the wrong number and letter combination had been typed in for the surgical code. After they submitted the claim with the correct code, the insurance company covered it. And other sources of assistance. Some doctors' offices are more helpful with appeals than others, and you may need to advocate for yourself. But that can be difficult to do when you're learning new medical terminology while dealing with a major diagnosis. I'm aggressive and pretty educated in my diagnosis, says Garner. When you get a cancer diagnosis, you have to learn a new language, and it's super overwhelming. Garner learned a lot from other cancer survivors and support groups, and she shares the knowledge she has collected, too. For example, she helped a neighbor who was diagnosed with breast cancer get 14 months of coverage for an infusion her oncologist recommended. The insurance company wanted to pay for only 8 months, citing an older study that suggested 8 months of treatment could be just as effective as 14 months. Garner used Outcomes for Me, a cancer support app that aggregates medical research for patients based on their specific diagnosis. Garner now works for Outcomes for Me, and they look through PubMed, a resource of medical literature from the National Institutes of Health and Google Scholar to find new studies. We were able to pull together a compelling case with numerous studies that showed it was more effective to have the full 14 months, she says. You may get help from a nurse navigator or a social worker at the hospital or your doctor's office. Additionally, nonprofits and advocacy groups specializing in your disease may provide resources and help with claims. Cancer-focused groups include the American Cancer Society, the Susan G. Komen Foundation, which focuses on breast cancer, and Triage Cancer, a national nonprofit that provides education on the legal issues after a cancer diagnosis. Among other disease-specific organizations are the American Diabetes Association, the American Kidney Fund, and the National Kidney Foundation, the Patient Advocate Foundation, and Triage Help. Help people with a variety of serious conditions navigate insurance and financial issues. I think one of the major challenges is that there is an overarching lack of awareness about the appeals process, says Monica Bryant, a cancer rights attorney and chief operating officer for Triage Cancer. This is a lot to put on the shoulders of someone who already has a too full plate. However, when we're talking about access to care issues and how to avoid financial hardships after a cancer diagnosis, the appeals process is an incredibly important tool. Bryant has helped reverse denials in a variety of situations. She has been able to get coverage for oral chemotherapy when the insurer wanted to cover only IV chemo, or for cancer screenings outside of the usual guidelines, for example, for a person younger than the standard age who needed the screening for a medical reason. She has also helped get coverage for off-label drugs prescribed by the doctor. The science moves faster than insurance companies and the law. And the science might indicate that a drug that is approved for one type of cancer is really effective in treating another type and is being prescribed off-label, she says. She helps gather the evidence to build the patient's case, which can include medical records, test results, literature, clinical trial results, a personal narrative, or a letter from the doctor, she says. Prior authorization is much less common for original Medicare than it is for Medicare Advantage plans, but you can get help navigating the appeals process for either type of coverage from your state health insurance assistance programs, which can be found at SHIPHELP.org. The Center for Medicare Advocacy and the Medicare Rights Center. Your insurance broker may also be able to assist, says Craig Wilcox, a Medicare insurance broker in Northern Nevada. Next, levels of appeal. If the first stage of your appeal is unsuccessful, you can request an external appeal in which someone from outside the insurance company reviews the evidence. We gather all the medical records and we make sure it's a complete story and timeline of what happened, says Christine Huberty, an attorney with the Center for Medicare Advocacy. If that appeal is denied, the next step varies depending on the type of insurance. For Medicare Advantage plans, you can request a hearing with an administrative law judge. The case must meet a minimum dollar amount of $190 to be eligible in 2025. You don't need an attorney, but people assume you do, says Huberty. She has assisted several people in getting denials overturned at this third level, especially for rehabilitation in a skilled nursing facility. For example, your doctor may say you need 6 to 8 weeks of rehabilitation after a stroke, but after 2 weeks of rehab, you get a surprise denial for further care, she says. The people who fight the denial often get it overturned, but they may have to do it 5 or 6 times over the course of their treatment. Huberty recently helped Rosemary Perry and Lisa Stralecki with a claim involving their mother's skilled nursing facility in Hartford, Connecticut. Their mother had a severe laceration on her leg from a chairlift footrest that needed 21 stitches. 3 days later, she fell on the stairs in her garage and couldn't walk. After 4 days in the hospital, she was transferred to a skilled nursing facility for rehab. I thought she was going to be there for 6 to 8 weeks to do the physical therapy and get this wound under control, says Strzelecki, who also is a neonatal nurse. But 9 days after she was admitted, she received a notice that the insurance was going to stop paying for the care. The sisters called the insurance company to appeal and let them know their mother needed daily nurse care, complicated wound care, and physical therapy. The coverage was extended. Then, 6 days later, the insurer said that coverage was going to end again. They appealed and got covered extended for 4 more days. After that, their appeal was denied. They wrote a letter explaining that she continued to need physical therapy and nursing care, but the insurer also denied the next level of appeal. Keeping their mother at the facility cost $700 daily without insurance coverage. They were billed the full cost for a week before moving her to another facility, and then she passed away the same day she was transferred. Shortly after the funeral, Perry and Strzelecki contacted the Center for Medicare Advocacy and connected with Huberty, who agreed to accept the case. She gathered the evidence explaining why their mother continued to need skilled nursing facility care during that time and sent it to the insurance company and the administrative law judge. The day they were scheduled to have a hearing before the administrative law judge, the insurer agreed to pay out for the week of care that was unpaid, which Huberty says is common. Had I known that Christine's department existed, would she have been able to have helped us sooner, asked Strzelecki? That would have been amazing. And we are now out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. Thank you for joining us, and until next time, this is Larry Wilson. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is also available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please give us a call, 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thanks again for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.